Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Power your home or business with CSpire Fiber. To learn more, visit supertalk.fm/CSpire. CSpire Fiber powers Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. Hello. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Rhino in the Element Wealth Studio, guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Morning, Rhino.
Howdy, howdy.
Just watching the old kangaroo hopping around again today, except based on the swings in the markets, man, it's jumping pretty high. Gee whiz. It beats all I've ever seen. Honestly, as far as just volatility, the NASDAQ presently up 42 points, the Dow down 389. I don't know how many times it's crossed the unchanged line this morning. A significant number just in our little meeting. I was watching it, peeking at it, started out way down, futures did. And then there was some discussion from the Trump administration that we might see a pause, and the market reacted in the tariffs. The market reacted positively to that. But then the White House comes, says, no, there's no plan to pause tariffs. So it's this uncertainty that is really rattling investors. And I think one concern you'd have to have is, okay, suppose we have a breakthrough and other countries come to the table, and it's being reported that some 50 have reached out to the White House to discuss a deal, to cut a deal. Let's suppose we have a breakthrough. I'm not so certain that investors just jump back in with both feet. Oh, great, that's behind us. And I think that's because it's still uncertain. We certainly could reverse all those. So something could occur that would cause the president to reimpose those tariffs. And I think we're looking at a period of time where the cash is going to stay on the sidelines for a while. I think there'll be some improvement. There'll certainly be some inflow if there are breakthroughs, and I'm hoping that there are. I think everybody is at this point. Now, of course, that's the point, is to bring these other countries to the negotiating table to cut a deal. The president has indicated he's concerned about the trade deficit that we have with other countries, particularly China. So there's two aspects of it, the trade deficit and then just the disparity in the tariff rates applied by China and other countries on American imports. And then, of course, the rates that we apply to products imported from those countries. So that's what is being negotiated, and I think the goal is to pare down that the disparity in the tariff rates, and then also to reduce the delta between imports and exports. And we'll see where that goes at this point. Hopefully something happens in a hurry. Because, as you know, by now, China slapped a 34% tax on all U.S. imports in retaliation. My concern is that they don't really care how that might affect the people of their country. The CCP, the communist regime that's in charge, if that causes some sort of hardship in that okay, you're putting tariffs on us, and therefore you may import less of what we send you. We don't care. If that means that literally, Rhino, you know, people die in China as a result, and that's not crazy far-fetched either. As far as the way they do not value human life, it's expendable to a great extent. I mean, that's right. It's in, as long as it's in the for the benefit of the community. I mean, that's the essence of communism. If it benefits the motherland, oh, that's what's important. You have to die, right, for that. That sounds a bit hyperbolic. What were you telling us last week about having safety nets outside the windows? Explain that to the folks again.
Yeah, there are several manufacturing facilities within mainland China that have open-air courtyards that were designed for the betterment of their workers. At least that was the way it was sold to them. Probably just a way to make the building more expensive so that the person that got a kickback to build the building could actually build it and make a little money, but that's besides the point. But conditions and pay and the general life of those that work in those manufacturing facilities is at such a level that they have to install safety nets on multiple floors, because these are all kind of taller buildings, within that courtyard to keep people from jumping off the top floors into the courtyard to escape their reality.
So I think the point I'm trying to make here, for what it's worth, is that this is why it's so dangerous to be so reliant for so many goods in this country on a country, on a regime that just doesn't value life, really doesn't care, honestly. They're not necessarily looking, if you think about it, to improve the quality of life for their people or the prosperity even of the nation. It's more that they're focused on dominating this country and supplanting this country and its power status.
Well, the other thing you've got to remember about China and many Asian cultures is that the idea of saving face is very important. And they have had a pretty significant drop in their Hong Kong stock market.
Big time.
Worst drop in forever. I mean, not forever, but since the early, mid-90s, maybe. Maybe not that early. Maybe the late 90s. But either way, big sell-off over there to the point that the Chinese sovereign fund had to jump in and start pumping money into the market to stop the fall.
Yeah. And you
can't... They may not care about their population the same way most Western countries care about their population, but they do care about saving face and ultimately putting on a strong front.
No doubt about it. Image means a lot. And I've often thought that's because they go out of their way. They expend a lot of resources and cycles to persuade their people, right? Our system is superior to a democratic free market economy that communism and these permanent regimes and these gaps that exist between the handful of people that run everything and everybody else that contributes, not for the betterment of their own lives or those of their families, but again for the community. It's incredible. I will say that I've seen evidence of a lot of people, you may have as well, I'm talking about on social media, in this country that seem to be embracing much of the ideology. And I'm talking about people who would cast themselves as hardcore conservatives, embracing the ideology of Bernie Sanders and AOC. These are the same people that call Republicans rhinos, now are saying, you know what? If it means that this will knock the rich down in this country financially, and that will be redistributed into the pockets of others, that's okay. I'm just a little shocked at this reaction. And the Democrats are going to use that effectively, I believe, from a political perspective. Now, Friday, interestingly enough, was one of the biggest days, is the biggest in 10 years, of retail cash flowing into the market. Retail investors, just the casual individual investors, as opposed to big-time hedge funds, institutional investors, wealth managers, etc. But for perspective, it was $4.8 billion on that single day, and the market, the total market cap is $62 trillion. In other words, it's nothing. It's less than 1%. It's 0.00, I think I'm going to get the zeros right here, 0.007%. So those same people who invested that their $4.8 billion of hard-earned money into the markets expecting that the value of that investment will grow, they rely on the institutional investors who really do make market swings to increase the value. The Dow now down over 1,000 points today. We're coming right back. We've got Mike McCormick. He's the president of Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation on at 11:05. We'll get his take on all this. Stay with us.
Hey, this is Bob. And
T Hospital in Collins, where your health matters.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays from the Element Well Studio. Yep. It's being reported from the White House. There is no plan to pause the tariffs, so hopefully they'll get together. If I were one of these leaders of a country that is affected, I'd be putting a call into the White House to talk. Now, one of the things that's a little confounding, just confusing, is do we have multiple goals here? And I think the president has been somewhat forthcoming about that. But is it to raise revenue from imposition of tariffs to the Treasury, or is it to reshore manufacturing, or a combination? Because if we reshore, then there won't be any tariff revenue. We won't be importing anything. And then, of course, the other concern is if we do reshore, which I think would be great, we're likely to be so productive in the manufacturing, these new factories. We're going to produce more than we could consume here. So we need the other countries to buy what we sell. And if they don't capitulate on tariffs, that'd be a problem. And if we don't import anything from them, then the leverage sort of goes away. So it's a bit confusing. The other thing I would recommend to Congress, don't count on tariff revenue when you're doing the budget. Now, the president says we're going to take in $1 trillion of tariff revenue next year. This year comes in, I think last I checked, at about $50 billion. Might want to check me on that, Rhino. I think presently the run rate for tariff revenue into this country is about $50 billion. And that makes sense when you think about $3 trillion of imports. Now, our GDP is about $31 trillion. So imports represent less than 10% of our GDP. But going from $50 billion, Rhino's checking on that for me, to $1 trillion.
Yeah, there's two different reports. One says 50, one says 80.
Okay, well, 50,
so
80.
Between 50 and 80.
All right, but 50 and 80 relative to $1 trillion There's a big gap there. I don't actually believe that would be the case unless, I mean, this is just thinking through this logically. Walmart CEO, for example, there's no secret. A lot of stuff in Walmart, inexpensive goods, intentionally. I mean, that's their go-to-market strategy. We sell for less, right? Hasn't that been their slogan for as long as I can remember? Maybe that's not their current slogan. I think that's been replaced, right, by something else. But for a long time, we sell for less. I mean, it would be on the signage, you know, out on the building under the Walmart logo there. And the CEO said, yeah, we understand that we as the American importer would be responsible for paying these tariffs, but we are going to demand that China absorb that. Now, absorbing it means they would have to reduce the cost of what they sell goods to Walmart for equal to the amount of tariffs that Walmart is going to pay to the U.S. Treasury. That would likely put a major hurt on the Chinese economy. And then the concern is, well, then they wouldn't have any money to buy American goods. It would kick their economy in the teeth so bad because they would have to imagine reducing the price of what you sell by well over a third. You're having to absorb those costs. Well, that's going to have an effect on the bottom line. And given the way the Chinese treat people, they probably would pass that on into much lower wages for the workers, which are already ridiculous. I mean, virtually indentured servitude as it is now. So if that were to happen, that means they would have less money to buy our stuff. So that's kind of the just thinking long term about the sequence of events and how that works. And I know that there's a lot of talk about these other countries have been ripping us off, certainly from the perspective of what we charge them in terms of tariffs, what they charge us. Yeah, there's a huge disparity that needs to be resolved. But there's another dimension to it that I think we have to consider, which is we're benefiting from the fact that people will work in these factories in such horrible conditions and with such terrible pay, they got to put nets outside the windows to keep people inside the building and heads down working. We're benefiting from the outrageously low labor. You and I have talked about it many times. And by the way, you did that research a couple of weeks ago on the Mexican auto worker. I've shared that with lots of people. $9 to $20 a day, right? I think through your research is what?
Yeah, some of the higher end get up to $30, $35 a day, but it's still per day.
A day, right. So,
whereas higher end in America would be per hour.
Right, exactly. So the vehicles that are made there are cheaper here because people are willing to work for a lot less. I've actually thought about this as perhaps a strategy to get these foreign countries to the table and to eliminate the disparity in both the import-export balance and the tariff rate difference. And by the way, the president just said that he's now considering 50% tariffs on China because they don't seem to be willing to negotiate at this point. And I certainly get that. You know, he's laying the cards on the table.
I think that's why he took such umbrage with it, because they said, hey, we'd like to come negotiate, and then they announced reciprocal tariffs.
Right.
So he's saying, well, if y'all are going to up it, I'm going to up it and cancel our negotiations.
We're playing chicken. There's no doubt about it. They can't be trusted. That's the bottom line. And it's a terrible situation that we've gotten ourselves in, which goes back 40 years ago, roughly. And there was a lot of really smart major U.S. consulting firms, Rhino, I've talked about that before, they said, hey, to their fortune companies, you know, you can make this stuff in China and Mexico for a whole lot less than what you can make it here. and boost your bottom line.
Fairness, it started off with Mexico. It wasn't really until 2001, I forget which year it was, that China joined the World Trade Organization. But that's when you really start to see the numbers plummet in American manufacturing. Jobs, sheer production, and wages.
Agree. The consulting firms, however, had been floating this idea
been doing
with
it for
them.
20 years before that.
Yeah, and so,
but mostly
but
it was to Mexico, Canada, that kind of stuff. It wasn't really till China opened up with the World Trade Organization and the World Bank started sending them tons of money and loans.
Yeah. But big customers for those consulting organizations that acted on that advice, pharmaceutical companies, which nobody knew. I don't think the average person, I didn't. All this antibiotic stuff, and I know you worked in the industry, wow, that we need when everybody's sick and infected, it comes from China, our most ardent foe. Yeah, that wasn't smart. There ain't no doubt about that. And so now we're trying to undo that and unwind that and correct that, and I think the president is right. Here's what I would say. What if we did the following? We said, okay, American corporations, you bring your stuff back over here. And the president talked about this, and I fully supported on the campaign trail. You're only going to pay a 15% corporate tax rate. You're going to get a big-time tax break. And I would add this feature with respect to taxes. You build a new factory here, 100% of your cost of that factory, you can deduct for tax purposes in the year the construction is completed. That would be a huge positive financial incentive for companies to build here. And then finally, one of the things that makes this remedy and attempt to mitigate the disparity is because of what we were just talking about. They don't have reasonable standards around labor or regulatory policies or healthcare benefits, which we now, every company in America with more than 50 employees has to adhere to those standards from the Affordable Care Act. Let's get rid of that. Let's get rid of that right now so that American companies are not compelled by penalty, if they don't, to bear those costs. And let's force the other countries to adhere to the same labor standards and regulations we do in this country for products that they sell into this country. Coming right back.
Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's middays, pardon me. We're in the C-Spire text line, 601-879-4395. We're in the Element Well studio. European Union is willing to negotiate on tariffs. It's being reported. Yeah, fake news, unfortunately. There is no consensus among the European Union as to how to deal with the situation. And it's not unusual, Rhino, for the European Union to be at odds, the member countries.
That's why Brexit happened.
That's exactly right. They can't agree. And I do think that the president is somewhat right in that the EU was essentially formed to increase their negotiating power and their scope and size to deal with this country. Now, the one thing that I think we have to think about with respect to the trade disparity in terms of what we import and what we export is that we have a whole lot more buying power and wealth than all the other countries do. I just don't know that there's a way to achieve balance there unless we get a lot poorer or they are enriched, or a combination of the two. There's no way that China has the buying power that this country does. Look at the per capita GDP of Germany versus this country. Didn't you talk about this last week? I think you brought it up. They're virtually the same. And Europe's the strongest. I mean, Germany's the strongest in the EU economy.
And they're about at our level.
Right.
As a state.
And we're 50th. We're the poorest state. So the best European Union nation in terms of per capita GDP is equal to the worst state in terms of per capita GDP. That's all you need to know. And I submit that's because it's a socialist country. They've never woken up to the fact that, you know, all that money you spend on social programs and all those taxes you take in, and now the stupid open borders that they've embraced. And the other thing I think we have to keep in mind is they're just lazy. They might get mad at me saying that, but if you go look at the work calendar in France, I mean, they take off more than they work. It's not like I work hard so I can have a little time off. No, I take off a lot so I can be ready to go back to work. It's totally opposite. Well, that's why their economy sucks. They don't produce what we do per person. And guess where all the automation comes from that they use to power their economy? This country. They don't make any of that. So I'm not sure that it's reasonable to think that, okay, we could eliminate that disparity because we love cheap stuff. We're enamored with cheap stuff. And the way to produce stuff in this country cheap, to equal that of the cost coming from other countries, including tariffs, is to automate. It's going to require the next generation modern factory, and I think that is where we're headed, and that absolutely would be a new renaissance in this country. There won't be factories with people standing shoulder to shoulder in them making stuff. You'll need some people, but nothing like we would have a short 20 years ago, for example, to build stuff here. And many of the factories that are in Canada, in Mexico, in China, that are owned by American companies, they're not modern. They're not sophisticated. They don't have to be because they get people cheap. So they're not incentivized to go automate and improve and innovate their manufacturing production process. That would change if they reshored. And there would be a massive amount of opportunity for the companies that produce all of that and support and implement all of that technology. That would be huge. And we would be way more productive. We're talking about running factories, if necessary, 24 hours a day with the lights off because there's nobody in them. I mean, isn't it Nike, Rhino, that makes their stuff in Vietnam? That's where most of their shoes are made, right? What the heck do Vietnamese factory workers make that are producing these $150 Nike tennis shoes? Guarantee it ain't much. So we have big-time tariffs on them. Now, they are talking like, hey, Mr. President, we'd like to talk to you about renegotiating those tariffs. Nike, of course, a Beaverton, Oregon-based company, a $46 billion a year American stalwart. But they make all that stuff. If they brought it back here and started making tennis shoes here and the other products that they make, which I think would be fantastic, those factories aren't going to be staffed the same the way they are in Vietnam. And that would change the game considerably. We have the power and the technology and the innovation in this country to produce way beyond if we brought it back and we built modern factories using current available technology. That would be a boon. And I applaud that. That'd be fantastic. So, yeah, the news is picking up this threat of 50% tariff if Beijing doesn't scrap its retaliation. I hope that works. If we're just playing cards, it's kind of fun to watch it. But this is kind of what I like to call the elephant's dance. The elephants are just they're stepping all over the place with big old powerful feet. And that's affecting the whole world.
There's conflicting reports on the salary of Nike's Vietnamese workers, but the most I can find that they would make in a month is $325.
Well, there you go. So
some claims are as low as $150 a month.
A month.
A month.
Right. So it, assuming they're working 20 days a month, we're talking $7 and change a day.
And many of the discrepancies is about the hours worked per worker.
Yeah.
Because some of these calculations have 70 to 80 hours per worker, while others are calculated at the state-mandated 48-hour work week.
Okay, for a week. So the 70 to 80 hours that you just cited, that's for a week?
Yes.
Okay, not a month.
Not a month.
Okay. So you see where I'm going. If we impose the same regulations and policies around labor and all the other myriad of regulations, consumer protection regulations and OSHA. Now, I think we got too many. But if we got to some reasonable regulatory framework and we required other nations to implement the same vis-a-vis those products they make that they send to this country, if you know they were made under the same circumstances, well, that would fix the problem right there. Then the manufacturers like Nike would say, oh, well, I don't really get any benefit financially from making stuff in Vietnam. I can't pay them $7 a day anymore.
Jimmy Fermin had picked up on that. 70 hours a week, and it's only $350 a month. Less than $350. The most I could find was $325 a month.
Right. So, and that's why I differ with the president a little bit in that we're getting ripped off. We're getting ripped off at people working for $350 a month. I get that we're getting ripped off on the tariff rate, but the $350 a month for a worker plus the tariff rate is still a whole lot cheaper than what we can make it for here. So we're benefiting from the super cheap goods relative to if they were made here, unless the caveat, it's totally automated. There are no people in those factories. JP Morgan this morning came out and increased the probability of a recession from 40% to 60%. And it absolutely could be that we need a recession to cleanse. It's unclear as to whether or not the Fed is going to back down with respect to interest rates. And the president is imploring, absolutely imploring Jay Powell to reduce interest rates immediately. He says oil prices are down, interest rates are down, the slow-moving Fed should cut rates, food prices are down, there is no inflation. And the long-time abused USA is bringing in billions of dollars a week from the abusing countries on tariffs that are already in place. Well, so we just looked that up. I said 50. You said 50 to 80 based on what you could find. And in my research, I found 50. But it's still, though, that's peanuts in the scheme of things. Is it true, though? There's no inflation? I mean, so that's complicated because it depends on how you calculate it. I mean, are people feeling like, yeah, stuff's going down? There's no doubt. The price of gas has come down somewhat. Price of oil, no doubt. But that's largely because commodities traders that deal that set the price of oil believe we're going into a recession, which means we're going to use less oil. That drives the price down. And then Saudi Arabia is a head scratcher. They've increased production. Now that's good in that it drives the price down, but I thought the idea was to wean ourselves off of foreign oil. So there's a conflict there. We're coming right back in the Element Well studio, the Allman Brothers with Jessica bumping us out of this segment.
Mississippi.
He was a hard-headed man. He was Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays. Once again, Mike McCormick, president of the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, will be in the Element Well studio in the next hour. So, just looking at the ceasefire text line, Mo says, perfect example, Gerard. Two pair of jeans I purchased last week that were made in Mexico cost $29 a pair. The cheapest made in America jeans I could find was out of Illinois and cost $79 a pair. Yeah, but my guess is, Mo's, that there was some difference. I mean, all blue jeans are not, I'm not trying to be argumentative here, but all blue jeans aren't the same. I think where it becomes a problem is when it's the exact same product. Same material, same cut, same style, same features. Clothing can be unique. But there are lots of goods that aren't. I mean, they're just the exact same. And when there's a difference in price, I think it's reasonable to say most people are not going to pay a premium, a significant premium, just because it's made in America. A lot of people just flat out can't. I mean, they just don't have the means to do so. So, and heck, you just about can't tell what's made in America anymore. That becomes a difficult prospect. One group that should benefit from the tariffs that's being reported right here in Mississippi, the shrimpers. They have been really devastated by cheap imports, pond-raised shrimp, right, Rhino? As opposed to, and that's been controversial in Mississippi with respect to the labeling of fresh Gulf shrimp when it's been imported from ponds in countries, again, that don't have the same sort of food safety regulations we do in this country. And that, of course, keeps the cost low. And that's why I'm saying if we required that in order for those goods to be eligible to qualify for import, that changed the game. But they're breathing a sigh of relief. Many of the shrimpers, Mississippi shrimpers, were on the verge of really financial disaster. Now, here's the question. How much more likely are we to buy shrimp, given that the price is likely to rise significantly as a result of it being harvested here domestically? And it's just a function, like we've been talking about, of just the higher costs of doing business in this country, which is something we got to address. But then you got to think about up to what point. At what point do we want to just forego food safety, for example, regulations that we have in this country, and you're just kind of on your own? I've talked to some folks in the food production business that say that's a big competitive challenge they have with other countries, is they just don't have the kinds of regulations we do here. So we certainly could debate, and it gets a little out of my scope of knowledge as to what kind of food safety, you know, rules and provisions do we need here.
Well, not to get too graphic, but when it comes to aquaculture, like shrimp and catfish and stuff like that, it's safe to say that in the U.S. there will always be regulations outlawing the presence of human fecal matter, whereas some nasty fish from Vietnam, pretty much guaranteed they will be tested and find human fecal matter.
I've heard the same thing. And again,
not exactly something you want to ingest.
Right. Totally agree.
Ever.
Agree. Absolutely, completely agree. On the ceasefire text line, Jeff in Carrollton says, in regard to a recession, whose definition do we use? Democratic definition or past accepted definition? That's a great question. And you know, I would say there is really no globally accepted consensus of that. Generally, it's just referred to as a contraction in economic output. Here's what I think does matter. And Ronald Reagan did a great job of articulating this and bringing it to a personal level. I don't remember the exact statement, Rhino, but it was, as you know, you worry about this sort of stuff when you don't have a job. You don't worry about it so much when other people lose their jobs. And when it hits home, is when you don't have a job. Where a recession would really knock the country back, not just from a financial perspective, but from a political perspective, more so than almost anything politically, and that's job loss. if unemployment ticks up, and that's what Jamie Dimon and others are forecasting, that the coming recession that they're forecasting, I'm not completely on board with that yet, could result, result in measurable job loss and an increase in the unemployment rate. You know what, Rhino? That may be the most powerful statement the other party not in control could make. That's all we heard about when Barack Obama won in 2008. And that was because we were coming out of the financial crisis where there was massive loss of jobs. And that's what, and it was like got up to 10% unemployment. It's 4% change right now. And that is what drove the politics of that age. If we get back to that, it's something we'd have to consider concerning. We're coming right back after Fox News and Super Talk News. BusinessJournal.com, Scott Coopwood, publisher and president.
And now, another hour of the talk that keeps Mississippi talking. Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Begin your transition now.
Now on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays from the Element Well Studio. It's hour two of the program. Don't forget, Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors, comes your way at 12:05 today. But right now, it's Mike McCormick. He's the president of the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation. Mike, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Mike. So first big question, of course, is what does all this tariff situation mean to Mississippi's farming industry?
Well, let's get it right off on the front end. Tariffs aren't good for farmers. We've got to pay for higher input costs, and we lose markets when this happens. But we also understand that we're not being treated fairly, and we understand that that's the goal of this, that we've got to have these markets, but they've got to be done in a fair and open market. So we're hoping we'll get there sooner rather than later. You can look at the markets last week. They responded just like the stock market did, very negatively, but it's very early. So we're hoping that some of it will come back this week. I checked it this morning early, and things were up just a little bit. It's going to have a bigger impact on some commodities than others. So, we're just riding this roller coaster.
Who were our big customers from a foreign nation perspective, Mike, for Mississippi's farming products?
So the good news for us is Canada and Mexico are our two biggest trading partners, and right now they've been spared under the USMCA agreement and whatever they've done to mitigate some of the border crisis. So right now we're okay with those, and I want to give credit to Secretary Brooke Rollins. She was in a meeting with us one day. We were supposed to have her for a whole hour, an American Farm Bureau board meeting, and she had to leave and go to the White House and talk about that. Part of our fertilizer supply, about 80% of potash comes from Canada, and any disruption in that market going into a year where we don't need any additional cost would have been really detrimental to the farmers. So Mexico and Canada right now, we're not talking about them. And then the third one is China, which is squarely in the crosshairs.
Okay, so the Commissioner of Agriculture, Andy Gibson, indicated on social media that China was not a customer of Mississippi farm products. So help us out with that.
Well, I don't know where he's getting his statistics, and he would probably know better than I, but I do know we send about 20% of the exports in the United States for a particular commodity go to the export market goes to China. So if the soybeans doesn't come from here out of a grain bin here, but it does come from a grain bin somewhere else, it's still supply out of the system that we're going there. About 20% of the exports for cattle come from the United States. That's part of our market for cattle. So if when I raise some beef, it leaves here and it goes to a feed yard and a place out in the Midwest where all the corn is. It didn't come directly from Mississippi, but indirectly it came from here and went there and then goes over there. So China's a big part of my market. There's no denying that.
Okay. Well, I may have misread it and misunderstood, but I thought in previous conversations we had had about this, just talking a couple of months ago, just about the prospect, knowing that this was the president's agenda and the president's plan. As I recall, Mike, in the president's first term, this did have a negative impact on the agricultural industry to the point where the federal government actually sent some subsidies, right, to the farming industry.
Absolutely. And we were very appreciative. This wasn't the farmers' actions, and the farmers are always at the tip of the spear. They're going to pay higher input costs, and they're going to lose markets, which is going to drive commodity prices down. So they called them the CFAP payments, or the farmers just called them Trump payments. Farmers don't want to live off subsidies,
sure,
but they're going to have some help again. We passed a $10 billion relief package right after Christmas, before even any of this was started, because the farmers are in such dire financial shape. So if you look at the first go around, the tariffs were put on. We had the loss of the markets, the increased input prices. It's my understanding through the Biden administration, they didn't take any of those tariffs back off. So they've been there. There were no payments. When we started this under the first Trump administration, the farmers had made about 10 years or more of some good times in the farming in our history, and they had some money and some reserve built up in their bank accounts, but they're not there anymore. The farmers were already in a crisis when this hits, and the banks were coming out. So it's not just me going to Congress and telling our senators and congressmen, hey, they're going to need some help. The bankers were coming out and saying, we can't make these farm loans anymore. They're just not the math just doesn't math. So they're going to have something. And Secretary Rollins were very upfront that the president understands that. And he understands that it's going to have to be some help coming from some direction to help them. One of the things that could be done is a farm bill update. We hadn't been able to pass a new farm bill since 2018. It's badly outdated. The reference prices that trigger the payments to the farmers hadn't been in the right place for years now. And we really need something to get across the finish line this year in Congress. Unfortunately, there's just not the votes there for it. So both sides of the aisle will have issues, and the SNAP payments, cuts to that, I think that the president wants to make, or just getting status quo has been really problematic. We've got some really good people working on it. But if we could get a farm bill across the finish line this year, it would help offset some of this.
Mike, do we produce more than we can consume in this country?
Oh, my goodness,
yes. That's what I thought. Yeah.
We produce way more here in the United States than we can consume ourselves, so we have to trade this. And it used to be the shining star of our trade war, of our trade policy, is agriculture would be a trade surplus, and then you could take that away from everything else that we were getting a deficit on. But since we started the disruption in trade, our trade has gone down, and so we're now a net importer of agriculture. And some of those things are things that we just can't produce here. I think our consumer is really expecting a grocery store full of tomatoes all year long. We can produce them sometimes of the year. Sometimes they got to come from somewhere else. Our tomato farmers here in the United States farm at a huge disadvantage because of labor costs. So they can grow them so much cheaper in Mexico than they ship them across the border, and our guys just can't compete with that. Can you level the playing field with that? Absolutely. But I don't know that you keep a grocery store full of tomatoes all year long unless you get them somewhere else in a different climate.
I see. Well, what are examples, Mike, of some of the farming goods that we actually import, maybe because we simply can't produce them here?
Well, everything that we can't produce here is just because of the labor cost that around the world is so much cheaper. These guys work for nothing, so they can produce it and send it here. And a lot of times their government is subsidizing it so cheap that it comes here so cheap, and we can't do it here in the United States. But certainly fruits and vegetables are one that creates a big demand on labor. We don't have an answer for labor. We've been talking to Congress for years about H-2A reform and haven't been able to push that across the finish line.
How would that help? Explain that to our folks, the H-2A program.
So I think you've got to have a consistent labor force here for our farmers to be successful, and we just don't have that anymore. A lot of these growing seasons are 10 months out of the year, so we could use labor from other companies, a legal guest worker program that could come here, work for 10 months, and then go back home. Some of these jobs now are very technical and very have to have a high degree of understanding what you're doing. So a lot of these combines and sprayers and things that we're running cost millions of dollars to be able to run. A place like South Africa that works on a different type of year. So when it's summer here, it's winter there. They can send some of their farmers here to run some of our equipment and then go back home and do that at their place as well. So the guest worker program works great. It's a lot more expensive to use this program than hire local labor. So the farmers also have to go in and advertise the job that they have, and that if nobody applies for it, then they can get their guest worker in from somewhere else. So it's something that nobody else wanted. It's much more expensive than hiring local labor. It's just that the farmers cannot find, a lot of times, most of the time, they cannot find consistent labor that's willing to work. And some of these, like I said, aren't 12-month-a-year job. No, everybody here needs 12 months to work, so they're working other jobs now.
Yeah, gotcha. Mike, if you could hang around, I got a couple more questions for you. We got Mike McCormick. Thanks. We got Mike McCormick, president of Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, in the Element Well studio. We're coming right back.
Mississippi. Let's go.
Welcome back, everyone. It is middays. We are live in the Element Well studio. So one of the interesting things about the tariff situation, Mike, and honestly, you did a great job of explaining this to our audience last time, and it has to do with the cost of inputs, which is a huge part, of course, of any production process, but especially agriculture, that many of the implements and the equipment and just the other inputs into the agricultural process, I assume maybe even some of the chemicals as well, they may cross the border multiple times where tariffs are applied, right, before they gets to the finished product and then purchased.
Absolutely. There's an old saying that farmers sell their stuff at wholesale. They buy their inputs at retail, and they pay the freight both ways. It just means that farmers don't have the ability to set the prices for their goods. In a manufacturing facility, if you're making widgets and your costs just go up 20%, for the most part, you have the ability to go up 20% on what you're charging for that. Farmers don't have that ability. So when you start raising input prices, you start limiting the amount of trading opportunities. Generally, that means the farmers are at the tip of the spear. So we do buy a lot of our inputs out of country. I get really frustrated with some of the issues that we have. Like, I think the general public would say, we don't need to let China buy farmland here in the United States, and I agree with them. But the majority of those land purchases were done through a couple of different purchases that the U.S. government approved, like Smithfield Meat. Okay. We sold our largest meat pork producing company to the government of China, and that was a terrible idea. But that land came over with it. So now you've got farmers caught in the middle of they're growing for this company. Should we put them out of business? Or I think the government should try to buy them back. If this is not a good idea, buy it back. We sold the world's largest chemical company, crop protection company, third largest seed company, Syngenta, to the Chinese, the government. And then the farmers have to go back and buy that from a foreign adversary. So we're at the mercy of somebody to say, wait a minute, why did you, if the government doesn't want us to do it, if this is a bad thing, why did we sell it to them?
Yeah.
Can't we get it back so we don't have to deal with the restrictions that we're dealing with? I'm really concerned that we don't have tort reform laws that would keep our chemistries here in the United States. They're trending to where they've got to go to China to find some protection over there, that our farmers are becoming more and more dependent, not only on trade, but also the things that we're having to import to get our inputs right, too. So we've got some work to do there.
Yeah. Well, I you would explain that, and honestly, I certainly never thought about it. I think the majority of our audience wouldn't be aware of all those nuances, and no. I mean, it's kind of a Byzantine system unto itself.
Well, and as far as Canada is concerned, and right now we got a reprieve from them, I understand a lot of our tractors, parts of it are made here, shipped to Canada, something's added on to it, it comes back to the United States, something's added on to it, it goes back to Canada, or it might swap two or three times across the border before we get something finished. So that would be hit with a tariff each time. Those things are very concerning. We just got to figure those out. And I know that the president is trying to get fair markets, and that's what farmers want. And I think talking to Secretary Rollins, she made no bones about it. Trump understands that he was elected from rural America. He understands that all the farmers voted for him, that he's trying to get to a better place. I just want to raise the flag that the farmers don't have a safety net under them right now without the farm bill and without the savings accounts to withstand what they did 8 years ago.
What would a good model look like, Mike, for our farming, our agricultural industry?
Well, we can produce it. We just got to get people to buy it. There's all kind of trade barriers that we tariffs that go into these other countries. I think what the president has done is only implemented half of what the other countries have done to us, which sounds very fair. But there's also non-trade barriers. They look at ways of not taking our cattle for some reason or another. They're not taking grain or something that they're producing. Their milk going into Canada sometimes is problematic because they protect their dairy industry there. So we've got to get some markets that are fair. If it's fair and open, then we just outproduce anybody else in the world, and that's what the world market's trying not to do, is let the farmers in America be successful.
Yeah. I mean, it is protectionism. And those in this country that are clamoring that the tariffs that we're imposing are protectionist in nature, is because we're dealing with other countries' trading partners that have for a long time had these protectionist policies in place.
The only thing I would caution is I was in some negotiations with the Japanese company wanting to build a wood mill here to do a specific thing a couple of years ago, and they made a comment to me that said, you know, you Americans, y'all think on 4-year terms. Yeah. That's as far out as you do. We're building this plant on a 100-year plan. That's our plan. So we're going to have to start something, and to get it fixed, we're going to have to keep going until it gets fixed. But it's very difficult, I think, to have someone having one direction and then 4 years later somebody else having another direction. If we're going to endure the pain, we got to get it fixed.
Yeah, and it is a matter of how long are they willing to just stay put with where they are, and they don't really care as much about the hardship it may impose on their people. We're different in America. We value human life and prosperity and quality of life.
I think that's a big difference from the Chinese. The Chinese government does not care what the hardships is going to be on their people. They'll make a decision and they'll stick with it. And we're going to have to see where this goes. We're only We're only a few days in, and last week the markets reacted just like you would expect. Let's see what it's going to do this week, next week, because I think some of the things that we have, the foreign countries are going to have to buy. Like when China runs out of an option in Brazil to buy their soybeans, they have to come back to the United States and get soybeans. There's only so much of it that can be grown. Now, it will affect the markets in certain times of the year. I had somebody tell me one time that China's not a trade partner. They're traders, and there's a big difference.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I hadn't really thought about that. And that it just feels like that their interest isn't so much and just the commerce and the economic aspect of this. There's another agenda here.
No, they buy and sell to control the market. They'll buy if the markets, they'll buy it and drive it as high as they can drive it, and then they'll break it back down without buying anything so they can start it all over again.
And that's why we have to break the cycle. I mean, imagine if they were the way we are as a trading partner, how much wealthier we'd all be, honestly.
Yep, we just got to get there without bankrupting the farmers, and I think a quicker end of this, a resolution to it, it would be very beneficial to everyone.
Well, Mike, are representatives across the country, are they expressing these concerns to Secretary Rollins and to the Trump administration that, hey, we can deal with this for a little while, but it's been tough the last couple of years, and we don't have a lot of reserves to withstand it?
Well, he ran on this, so, I mean, he lived up to exactly what he showed everybody when he was running for election. Secretary Rollins came to an American Farm Bureau board meeting, which I have the opportunity to sit on, and she told us that we were the first organization that she had come to in an official capacity, and she was wanting to stay longer, but she had to go to the White House and deal with having her voice in this process. She told us not to be negative because he was committed to this, but to come up with some answers that would help, and she would be our voice there. But she left our meeting giving us her commitment.
Okay.
That she was going to support the farmers and he was going to do the same thing. So as this goes on, I think you will see, or I hope you will see, something come back to the market to help the farmers sustain this.
And there are other industries, of course. I mean, the farmers, even though the demand, obviously, for farming goods is somewhat elastic, I mean, the fact is people change their consumption habits based on the price of those goods.
Yep. We'll see where that goes. The beef cattle sector that I'm in is very prone to that. So if we hit a recession and people can't afford to go eat the nice steak at the nice restaurant, they will start cutting back to different proteins. So we'll see if that's going to happen. Right now, we've got a very low cattle inventory here in the United States. It was based off drought and just some historical bad years over the last 10 years or so. So our numbers are way down. It's going to take some time to build that back up.
Yeah.
And I think that sector probably will be the shining star of this through the whole thing.
Okay. Well, let's hope for a good, positive outcome and that this is short-lived and comes to an end soon.
You know, our farmers are headed to the fields to do what they do best, and that's farming. So they're gonna go grow a crop right now. In August, we'll be worrying about whether all of this pencils out or not again. So
exactly
I'll let
right.
you know.
And we appreciate them, the state of Mississippi's farmers and the farming industry so critical to our state. Appreciate it, Mike, for coming
in. Appreciate you letting me be on.
You bet. We're coming right back, folks, with half an hour of Middays from the Element Wealth Studio. Stocks are really sinking because of the trade war fears. And you know what else doesn't seem to be a safe haven either, Rhino? It's the old funny money. How's that looking today?
Yeah, it's Last I checked, it was south of 80. Is it 78?
Yeah. Again, if there's a positive, a so-called silver lining out of this, it's we talked about it last week. Price of oil, $61 a barrel, largely because traders think we're headed to a recession and therefore we'll need less oil. And then Saudi Arabia has increased production. So it's not a result of the increase of production in this country. That really hasn't taken hold yet. In fact, whatever happened to the XL pipeline? Because I know that when the president took office, he reversed Joe Biden's dumb policy of shutting it down. But I've not seen any news that even though construction can resume, that it has, and that there's any plan to get it on board and online. And I think that's because the energy companies say, wait, we don't want more supply. That's going to depress the price even further, and that would have an impact on our profitability. You get to a certain point where it's not even viable. And I think that breaking point's in the $50 to $55 a barrel range. They get to that, and it's a break-even proposition. We're at 61 right now. So they're going to hold off on taking advantage of relaxed regulations to produce more, at this point, at least. But the president has said that all talks will be terminated with China as long as their retaliatory tariffs are in effect. And he's threatening to increase the tariff to 50%. Wow. Now, I know it's anecdotal and it's first world problems, right? But I found out this weekend at the golf club, price of clubs going up 25% immediately. $1,000 drivers now. That's going to obviously push a lot of people out.
But, yes, it's a good thing I never picked up golf.
Well, you know as well as I do, it don't matter what you do, it's probably going up. And I think we have to just get accustomed to that and accept that. Now, will it stay there? Don't know. All of this is just unknown, and that's why the markets are so jittery. They just don't know. And we have to rely on our leadership, our president, and those in his inner orbit that are the architects of all this to keep us going. Now, Peter Navarro, who is he's the trade guy. He's the one that designed all this. He came out over the weekend and said, before the president exits office or during this term, he didn't actually say it that way because I think there's still an expectation that he's going to serve another term. And so they won't say that, those that are in the administration. But he said that during this Trump term, he expects the Dow to hit 50,000. 50,000. That would be monumental. No, I mean, there's never been anything remotely close to that. 50,000. I couldn't wrap my head around that when he said it. It's currently at 37,000, just so you'll know. So you're talking, what, a 50% increase, roughly. Maybe not quite that much, 40%. That's a lot to get to 50,000. 40%. You can make some money off that now. Meanwhile, up there in Washington, Elon Musk, he appears to have broken with the Trump administration on tariffs, and he is slamming the architect, Peter Navarro, says he wants a zero tariff situation with Europe. Man, my guess is we may not see Elon Musk around the White House anymore. He was noticeably and conspicuously missing last Wednesday. The big announcement, the big tariff announcement there on the White House lawn. Musk said about Navarro, a PhD in econ from Harvard is a bad thing, not a good thing. Results in an ego brains greater than one problem. Oh, my gosh. And, of course, his companies are struggling, are Musk's companies. And I think that's because he inserted himself so significantly into political activities and politics in general, you're inevitably going to make a lot of people mad. And he did that, especially where in markets where that he really needs, and that's the EU. And now, overwhelmingly, people who live in the EU say, we're not buying any Teslas. So my guess is he's going to return to his private businesses and attend to those. I'm not sure we're going to see him anymore. Now, I know the White House has said, yeah, it was always planned for him to exit in May sometime. I don't remember ever hearing that when they first brought him on. He said July 1, 26 was kind of his target date. And all of a sudden, that's been moved forward into May. I just feel like that there's probably kind of a mutual understanding here of what's going on. It's complete opinion and speculation on my part. But it was interesting to me that he was not there at what has really been the president's biggest announcement since he's been in office, last Wednesday. And he was nowhere to be found. Markets now still trending downward. And the Bitcoin giving up a little bit of its losses, but still it's down $6,000 today. So Mike from Columbus says, I thought it was thought to be two consecutive quarters talking about what a recession is, of economic decline. It is, Mike. That's the widely held view of it, but there's no consensus. Generally speaking, when you think about contraction in GDP, you don't get too worried about that unless it affects your job and your income. And it's when folks lose jobs or they see layoffs or wage cuts, that's what really causes problems. And so J.P. Morgan, for what it's worth, is predicting that we are headed to a recession, and it will involve lots of job loss. Now, the silver lining, again, besides the price of oil going down because of the decrease in demand, interest rates. However, today, interestingly enough, 10 years back north of 4%, but now the markets are predicting 5 interest rate cuts this year. But you know this, Rhino. Have they gotten it right yet the last 2 or 3 years? They've been wrong on this handicapping of rate adjustments quite a bit. So I don't know how much stock I put into that. Of course, that's why there is a market. That literally is rolling the dice, playing the roulette wheel at the casino there. No doubt. Gary the Berg says, golf clubs are going up. Answer is better negotiations on the first tee to make the mullets pay the increased cost. I just saw that and thought, you know, I wonder how we're going to see this kind of proliferate across the economy. It's not just going to be golf clubs. And I think that's what the president says when he says, just hang in there and, you know, and expect some disruption. We have to deal with it. And I think that's correct. Now, I also came into receipt of a company called Westgate, and they're telling their customers expect price hikes. On May 1, prices may increase by up to 50% depending on product category and cost impact. I'm not exactly sure what they make. I probably need to look at that. So, but it's interesting to see how all that works out. Also, I got an email from the administration this weekend entitled, "Do You Want a Doge Check?" And there's a click. There's a button you can click that tells whomever's sending this out from the administration, yes, I want a $5,000 check. Who says no to that, by the way? That's an email I got. I don't know if everybody got that, but that the subject of the email, do you want a Doge check? You open it up. It says, would you take a check, friend? I'll even sign it. This is from the president. I'm proposing something completely unprecedented, $5,000 Doge dividend checks. And then there's a button, red background, white letters atop, says, tell me you want one. You click that. You go put your name. Of course, what you're doing is giving them your name for more emails, I'm sure. That's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't get an email about a Doge check.
I got one. So I might get a $5,000 check. I guess you'll be left out because you didn't tell them you wanted one.
I guess so.
Thomas in Greenwood says it won't hit 50,000, talking about the Dow. He has demolished investor confidence. And I have some concerns that, okay, if we get a breakthrough, investors are still going to be a little hesitant to just jump right back in. I think it'll take a little while for them to feel the warm fuzzies about that. Are you confident enough in Trump to pull some savings and drop them in the market today? No. I'm absolutely not buying. I'm not investing. I don't think the time is right for that. I still think we got more volatility in store, and there's going to be plenty of opportunity to jump in. That's just my opinion. I'm not a wealth advisor. Please keep that in mind. I did see a report that estimated what iPhones would cost based on the tariffs, and you've seen ranges from $2,500 to $5,000. Somebody even said $30,000. I think that's a little out of line. We're coming right back. Final segment.
Hey, this is Will.
2-1.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It is Smuggler's Blues by the great Glenn Frey. Speaking of iPhones, says Thomas in Greenwood, this is going to kill C Spire and other providers as they won't be able to lure and keep customers by offering free devices even at a 25% tariff-induced markup. It will kill any profits. Well, here's what we know. This isn't sustainable. The question is, how long does it endure? That's really the question. I don't see this as permanent. I mean, it literally would tip the entire world into a major recession. I mean, it would be bad. And that's why I don't think it's permanent. I think something's going to get worked out because we're not going to buy $3,000 iPhones. It's just not going to happen. So if the goal here is to help the middle class, even the poorest people in this country have smartphones, right? That's why they're not poor. I mean, being poor in America today is, geez, I only have 3 plasma TVs, right?
Plasma's a bit dated.
Well, okay. LCD.
Flat screen, yeah.
Flat screens, yeah. I'm thinking about the early days of flat screen TVs. They were plasma, and they were about $4,000, as I recall.
But don't you dare leave it on a news channel, or you're going to have that Chiron stuck in your screen
it
forever.
It burns it in, doesn't it? That is so true. But good grief, how has the price of that plummeted through the years? Think about that. So, yeah, I had to get the smallest cup of latte this morning. I couldn't afford the big one, right? I mean, I'm exaggerating, I know. But you know this. We've talked about this before. Our poorest people in this country, not that we don't want them to stay poor. We want them to be lifted up and ascend the economic ladder. But the fact is, they're still wealthier than the vast majority of the rest of the world. That's what gets missed. It's the incumbency that I talk about all the time. Oh, life's so tough. I go to college for $100,000 a year tuition and drink $8 lattes 3 days a week and have 14 devices. I mean, you know what I'm saying. Man, we are so blessed in that respect. But we want to get better. I mean, that's not a cause to stop. But it is a reason to reflect before we blow the system up here. And that's what drives me crazy, especially when the liberal Democrats say, we need to be more like them. You mean like Germany, whose GDP is equal to the state with the lowest GDP? And we're working to improve that. We are in the state of Mississippi. We're going to surpass them quickly.
Well, look at a more stark example of differences between, say, wages and buying opportunity, where we're talking about Vietnam and manufacturing shoes in Vietnam for, we did the math, I forget who did the math on it, but they were saying it was about $1.25 an hour. Well, if it costs you $2 a day to eat,
yeah,
as a round number, I'm pretty sure it's in that ballpark in Vietnam, $2 a day to eat. You got to have $60 a month to survive, and they make $300 a month.
Mm. Okay. That
makes
compare
sense. That to America. How much would you think it would cost to survive to eat a day? And is it the same percentage of total take-home pay?
Yeah, I'd have to think about that. But I dare say that there's a lot less disposable income available outside of the absolute bare bones necessities in those countries. I mean, that stands to reason than there are here. So we have enormous buying power. And that's why our markets are so desirable to the other countries. If we don't buy their stuff, who the heck is? And the reason we have enormous buying power is because of the wealth that's been created in this country. You can't deny that. You absolutely can't. You were just telling me about the comparison of the markets in the 90s today, right? The market cap.
Oh, yeah. The volatility of today. Just from the lowest point in the stock market at this point today to its highest gain today, that volatility this morning, the delta between those two points is bigger than the value of the entire market in 1995.
Unbelievable. But it just indicates just how prosperous we have been. All you got to do is look at the GDP. My gosh, it's off the charts. And we don't, I think, reflect on that as much as we could. That doesn't mean to stop. And that's what aggravates me about people that, even those that I would consider to be conservative, are starting to pipe up and they're decrying profit. Like, oh my gosh, now you're sounding like the Democrats. Without the profit, there's no economy. There's no jobs. There's no innovation. There, all these other amenities and niceties that we have don't exist. Man, I don't know why that's lost on so many people. Farmers have been told to hang on. It's going to get better since COVID. It's hard to keep hanging on when everything we purchase keeps going up and what we sell keeps going down. It's on the C Spire text line. Somebody said, yeah, if I get a $1,000 driver to hit it straight down the fairway, 275, I'm in. That's what they're counting on. Average day in my wife's village and town in the Philippines is $6 a day. Yeah. We're out of here. Back with you tomorrow. Stay safe and God bless.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.